Welcome to Foolproof Theology. My name is Chase Davis, and I am your host. Today, I wanted to do a follow-up episode on the latest episode we released last week. You can go listen to that, where we talked about Acts 29 and our removal. We included the audio of them kicking us out. And so if you need to go get caught up, I'd recommend that. But I want to do a follow-up episode here today on that episode. I've received a ton of people reaching out, offering prayer and support. I've heard from Acts 29 pastors in Europe, Christians in Africa who have even sympathized with me, who are used to be part of Acts 29. So it's been a really overwhelming amount. If I have not replied to you, apologies. There's just been a lot of emails and correspondence this week. And just to be clear, that episode was not released for any way to have pity on us, or you know, to highlight that somehow we've been transgressed against unnecessarily. We wanted to highlight the really inconsistency of the narrative being funneled to Acts 29 pastors today. And so our heart is for action to be taken on this matter, less for any kind of pity. But I do appreciate the prayer. Keep praying for us. We need all the prayer we can get here in Boulder, Colorado, as our church faces some persecution out here on the front lines of ministry. So thank you so much for reaching out. It's great to know we're not alone. Many people who've reached out have shared similar experiences. And you know, with all of that, people are complicated. Each church is different. Each church is unique. And so I just want to say thank you. Thank you for the support. Thank you for reaching out. We did release an episode over at American Reformer on Acts 29. It actually goes into more detail. One guy read and he goes, well, that one was worse than the episode you did in terms of kind of an expose on what's going on behind the scenes. And so I'll put a link to that in the show notes. You can go check that out. But I appreciate a share there and some critical reflection on that piece. Today in the episode, I want to start out really addressing like concerns that have been brought up. Totally fair, by the way. You know, I didn't start this channel to do this kind of stuff. I'm not a reaction channel. I don't, you know, I'm not an expose channel on Big Eva or corruption. If you look at my past episodes, it's just me trying to learn, trying to converse with people who I find interesting, written interesting books. And so it's more of a podcast born out of curiosity and a desire to learn and get some free consulting for myself theologically. But I did want to address at least a couple concerns that have been brought up. First of all, there's some people who may hear it and kind of be surprised by our surprise. You know, like, why didn't you see this coming? Or surely you knew they would do something. And I just want to address that one up front. We had a conversation with a pastor this week who he was like, I mean, you guys knew you were like pushing the envelope. Why was it so surprising? And to be fair, like, we knew that we were asking questions. We knew that we were publishing content that may not mix well with the kind of Acts 29 ecosystem. Our impression had been that it was a big tent where different viewpoints could be respected or at least tolerated. And so that was the kind of presumption we were operating under. And really, mainly the shock comes from a couple of things. One, we thought we were friends with these people, particularly the two guys that were on the call that kicked us out. And I want to talk specifically about that situation in a little bit. But we have been told up to that point, as of, you know, November of 22, so we got removed in January of 23, that we were wanted in the network, that our contributions were valuable, that they need our voice now more than ever. And so these prior conversations had been good in terms of at least being clarifying and honest. They never produced a lot of fruit. There's often a lot of promises made, like a paper's coming on that, or we're going to talk about that. And those things never happened, but we were led to believe that these two people were our friends and they were trusted conversation partners. And so for them to be on the call and then remove us was very much a betrayal of the friendship. And so that's part of where the shock came from. The other part is that, you know, when we, a couple of years ago, decided to start asking questions behind the scenes, we knew that it could result in some blowback. We always joked, like, I guess they could kick us out. But we had even brought that up with Dave and others, like, do you just want us to leave? And as Matt and I talked about that on the last episode, we were always told that we were welcome and needed. And so that's a lot of where the shock comes from. All these prior conversations, whether it was a board member that Matt had or me with Doug Logan, they were always marked by like, no, we want you guys in the network. So that's a lot of where the shock comes from. It wasn't that we didn't see this as a possibility, like they could remove us, but it was more out of like what we'd been told. And so it really did feel like a betrayal of the friendship and trust that we had established. The second concern that was brought up, and I've been told by some friends, is that, some people are claiming that we selectively edited the podcast and that we excluded some content. This is just a lie. This is just not true. I could bring up iMovie. That's where I edit my shows. And I could show you the whole stream. I could send you the original audio file of the recording. There's nothing that's been excluded from that phone conversation. And I think specifically what they're saying we excluded was our own confession and owning up to our mistakes. And that's not there. That never happened. So I don't know what to do with that other than to dispute it. You know, the Bible talks about there's going to be two sides, whoever brings their case first. And so they've been bringing their case against us to Acts 29 pastors, actively lying behind our back. And so I think it's important to clear that up. We made clear at the end of the last episode, or at least we tried to, that in terms of Doug Logan and Dave Bruskus, the two guys that were on the call, really we view them as mainly just hirelings doing their job. So, they did commit, I would say, sin against us. To this day, we have not received any contact from them on this matter. But I would say that they were just fulfilling their duties. That does not absolve them of responsibility necessarily, but it simply is a reflection of the Acts 29 system of governance. They got paid, they were told we were removing them, and they themselves, Doug and Dave, said they agreed with the decision on the call, however much I truly believe that. And they chose to get paid rather than stand up and say, no, this is wrong, because there's no evidence of this. And so they chose to, take money to kick a church out of fellowship based on no evidence. So I'm not trying to absolve them of responsibility, but I do want to highlight a bigger problem, which is the responsibility of the situation rests entirely on the board of Acts 29. Now, I will apologize to my listeners who are not part of the Acts 29 network or are not familiar. A lot of this is going to be like inside baseball. I had one of my Patreons comment that it's a bit of inside baseball. Look, I totally appreciate that. That's not typically what I want to do on the podcast. I want to do more deep dives on theological topics. But the reason I think it's important to explore is it deals with matters of ecclesiology, of church governance, of how we treat one another, of discipleship and formation. And then planting churches is a major feature of Acts 29. And so I think it's important to get a little bit behind the curtain and understand what's going on behind the scenes. And we do that in the American Reformer article, but I also want to do that here. I'm going to say some stuff here that I was not able to say in the article. And I'm going to try to steer clear of any speculation. And if I do speculate, I want to try to be entirely clear that I'm speculating. So I wanted to provide some language, some people, so that people who are either in Acts 29, formerly part of Acts 29, or just want to know more about the situation, they can get a little bit better understanding of the way it's structured and the way they execute these decisions. So you heard on the call reference to the entire senior leadership team. This is a vague term that really no one knows who's on that team. It's very unclear. We don't know if that includes paid staff. I think they said not paid staff, but it would include maybe vice presidents, and the board. This gets into a more specific terminology that you'll hear in Acts 29, the executive leadership team. So the executive leadership team, that is not on the website. These are all kind of shadowy teams, organizations in Acts 29 that make major decisions about the network with no knowledge to current pastors and no ability to get on those teams unless you're one of the chosen ones. And so the executive leadership team kind of operates in the shadows of Acts 29. You'll also get in the Acts 29 ecosystem, and part of the problem is the restructuring every 2 years. Even if you don't agree with the stances we're taking or the positions we have on certain cultural matters, you know this if you're part of Acts 29. Acts 29 has gone through so many reorgs, it's hard to keep track of who's in charge, who reports to who. Lately it was there's regionals or networks that are regional. So you'll have US West, US East, U.S. Northeast, these kind of regions, and then they'll get reformatted and reorganized. These regional leaders, the guys who are in charge of regions, they typically get a stipend in Acts 29. They're paid by Acts 29. You may not see them on the website, but these are guys who have major power in the network, and they do the bidding of the board, and so they enact a lot of decisions for the board. The regional leaders pick area leaders, and so area leaders are a subset of regions. So areas are like Colorado would be an area. Arizona or Phoenix would be an area. Ohio would be an area. And so you'll get multiple guys who are areas. One thing that just in our story that you may find interesting, and I've hesitated to mention this because, I'll just speak for Matt on this. So it was interesting. We planted a church, the Well Longmont, love them. We're in a sub network with them called the Well Collaborative. And when there was a vacancy for an area lead of Northern Colorado, Acts 29 went to our church planter up at the Well Longmont and picked him to be our area leader over us. Now, in the grand scheme of things, it doesn't matter because I like the guy at the Well Longmont. It doesn't matter. It's just an odd thing that that we're now reporting in the ecosystem of Acts 29 to a guy that we planted. So that it's just a little weird. We brush it off. We try to go, you know what? No big deal. We'll follow whoever's the best leader and most competent. And we trust this guy at the Well Longmont. So we love him, believe the best in him. So no problem there. But it was a little weird, and it kind of tipped our hand, or tipped their hand, you could say, to where we fit in the stream of Acts 29. One thing that I've already suggested is that the responsibility rests at the board level. We talk about that in the American Reformer piece, that the way Acts 29 is structured is that the board holds all the power. So what that means is that even in these assessment conferences that Acts 29 will put on, ultimately it's the board who holds the power of who's in fellowship and not in fellowship in Acts 29. Now, I heard one story this week where an Acts 29 pastor went to assess a potential church planter, and he kind of had some theological issues with his church planter, wanted to challenge him on a couple of things. He got out of the meeting and was approached by leadership and said, "Hey, by the way, you shouldn't have done that, because this guy was kind of already rubber stamped. So let's not do that again." And so there's this really cronyism that goes on within the assessment processes. One of my friends who applied to Acts 29, they get really subjective, the assessments. So one of my friends who applied went through the assessment process, went to the discussion at the conference, and it was, came time for a review. So typically you sit with two or three pastors who review you, that you do, you present a sermon, all that kind of thing. And the thing he got docked on was because he was wearing khakis. They didn't like him as a church planter for Acts 29. So it's a very subjective process. It's very strange. And so I just wanted to highlight that briefly. So ultimately, though, the board has the power. They are who made the vote. We know that. And so I wanted to go into who's on the board of Acts 29 today. The reason this is an important topic is because the board is a self-selected entity. There's no application for any Acts 29 pastors to get on it. It's whoever's in power on the board basically gets to pick who else is on the board. So we've had former board members like Eric Mason, Dwayne Bond, Leonce Crump. When a board member is removed, they typically don't let us know. I remember back in 2020 when Eric Mason even left our network, left Acts 29. There was no notice, no nothing, no communication about why he left and that kind of thing. So it's just a very odd culture. But what you'll see on the board is cronyism. You'll see very similar guys who are supposed to be rotating. Per their bylaws, they're supposed to be rotating every certain amount of years, 3, 4, 5 years. But what you're seeing is a cronyism where the same guys are on the board and they're only selecting guys who agree with them. And so this is tempting in any church with governance, with elders. It can be really tempting to get cronyistic. And what I mean by cronyism isn't necessarily guys who like agree theologically, but have no, they're just, they turn out to be yes men. There's no disagreement allowed. And so you could go back in the Wayback Machine online, you could look at who's on the board. They're supposed to be rotating out, but over time that power has just become centralized and become a bunch of yes men on that board who vote and don't, you know, go against the wishes of the board. So right now the board members are Brian Howard, Matt Chandler, Hunter Beaumont, Vic Keller, and Donnie Cho. That's available on the Acts 29 website. One of the few things regarding leadership that is available on the Acts 29 website. Donnie Cho is a pastor in Philadelphia. I'd never heard of him before 2 years ago. So I don't know when he joined the network. I don't know how he got on the board, but he is on the board. He was one of the guys that Matt talked to in the last 2 years, and Donnie was positive on us. "Hey, thank you for bringing your questions. We're glad to have you in the network." So we had talked with a board member and that conversation presumably went well. Dave Bruskus was on that call with Donnie and Matt as well. You've got Vic Keller, who goes to Matt Chandler's church. Vic is an entrepreneur, very well established and very well connected in Acts 29. You've got Hunter Beaumont. He's at Fellowship Denver in Denver. He was my mentor in seminary, and he helped plant the well. And so part of the reason we felt surprised and betrayed is because there was no communication from Hunter that this decision was even being pondered by the board. Hunter never reached out to go like, hey, like maybe you should consider, you know, your posting and your future in Acts 29. There was nothing. It was just radio silence. You've got Matt Chandler, who most of you know. He's a big name in evangelicalism, kind of a darling of the evangelical establishment. And you've got Brian Howard. Matt Chandler went through his own process of being removed as president. Now he's the executive chairman of the board, but Brian Howard is now the president of Acts 29. Acts 29 did have a $9.13 million budget last fiscal year, but because of some fundraising that didn't fall, that fell short, they reduced that budget to like 8 point something. And so we highlight that in the article because according to their budget, that only got released after we got kicked out of the network, and it's still not very detailed. The member dues of that 9.13 make up about half. So half of the money being raised by Acts 29 is outside sources, whether it's conferences, assessment conferences, or other things like that, sponsorships, or just general fundraising. They'll do an annual dinner in Dallas to try to get money to support church planting. Right now, Acts 29 has 45 staff. For around 700 churches globally, 500 churches nationally in the U.S. So that's a pretty heavy staff. But speaking of a $9.13 million budget, you know, that's a lot of staff. And, you know, just in the grand scheme of things, you've got an organization like NAM, which is the SBC's church planting arm. So NAM is the North American Mission Board. They're the one who plants churches in the United States. They have a budget of, I think, $400 million. And so in terms of the grand scheme of things, Acts 29 is rather small, at least budgetarily, compared to something like NAM. NAM is much more powerful. They have much more influence, much more capability, and they have their own issues. And I'm not privy to those, but I know a lot of my Baptist brothers are very concerned with similar things happening in NAM. The thing with the budget that you should know about is that 3%, only 3% of that 9.13 is allocated to church planting. So when you think about supporting a church planting organization, you know, that's a fairly small number. I don't think many pastors in Acts 29 have a concern with that, but it is an odd thing that of the money that we give 2 to 3% to the network as kind of member dues, every church is required to do that based on their annual budget, 2 to 3% to central, only 3% of that goes directly to church plants. And so most of it goes to bureaucracy, to conferences, to staff. And so there's a culture there where you've got a very bloated budget that's supposed to be dedicated to church planting, but not a lot goes to church planting. The thing you need to understand about Acts 29, and this is a problem across major evangelical institutions, including the Gospel Coalition, which Acts 29 has deep ties to. Acts 29 used to host their articles on the Gospel Coalition. I don't know why that partnership ended, but I think it ended around 21 or 20. But they're very tied together. Lots of mutual social networking there. Also Christianity Today, and we're going to talk about that in a bit. But these major evangelical institutions have a huge problem, and the problem is incompetence. Leadership incompetence. You saw this on the call. They were not prepared. They did not have evidence for any charges. There was no process. It was just incompetence. And this incompetence runs right to the top of the network. It runs right to the top of many institutions. You could see this in the latest drama down at Southwest Baptist Theological Seminary. There's just incompetence, incompetence, incompetence. So what the reason I want to bring that up is most of these men are not intentionally malicious, but they're culpably incompetent. And it's running roughshod over the Acts 29 network. That doesn't absolve them of responsibility. And I think some of my listeners may be disappointed for me to hear that because I think it would be more clickbaity for me to go, these are wicked evil men, because we typically like to think of good versus evil. And that's very compelling to us as humans. But a lot of these men are just completely incompetent. And the incompetence usually results in evil things happening and wicked things happening. And that's just what we're seeing. What incompetence does is it causes chaos. So in Acts 29, you've got the left hand doesn't know what the right hand is doing. So you've got people who do not know what their jobs are, who do not know who they report to, and who do not know what leadership is doing. And so oftentimes when I would go to my area lead or my regional lead, I'd be like, what is this about? And they'd be like, I have no idea. So like, there's no clear communication. It's just incompetence. And the incompetence produces a culture of uncertainty. When you've got incompetence at the top of a network, especially one as large as Axe 29, it produces a lot of uncertainty and anxiety in the system because there's not competent leadership. And I've talked about leadership with Clifford Humphreys on another episode. You can go listen to that on the importance of moral philosophy and excellence in leadership rather than pragmatism. But this incompetence is very much rooted in a pseudo pragmatism. What this also produces is that anyone who asks questions or asks clarifying statements that would expose incompetence or weakness, or maybe they highlight an error, something has gone wrong, rather than reacting like most good leaders would, which is saying, man, I didn't know about that. We should do something about that. I will do something about that. I will take responsibility. They view all of that and they react in anger and fear rather than receptivity. And so rather than being a receptive leader who goes, we can learn, we can grow, we can always get better, thanks for pointing that out, their incompetence is so deeply rooted in their position that when they're confronted on a matter, they react in anger and fear. And so they're threatened by anyone who doesn't toe the line and just blindly trust them. And God help that person, if that person starts gaining an influence and really outsizing them an influence, then that person must be eliminated. That person must be put out to pasture because they become a threat to their power. And because they want the heart behind like us asking questions was always to get clarity and to get more competent leadership, to let them know, hey, this is what's going on. What are we going to do about it? To build unity, because they're incompetent, they view it all as a threat to their power and influence. And so it ultimately becomes about job protection. A lot of Acts 29 pastors know if they're getting paid by Acts 29, they have to toe the line. And if they don't toe the line, they're going to lose their salary and their position with that within Acts 29 or within the ecosystem of evangelicalism. And so it always results in job protection. In fact, they're so incompetent that they would rather never ask a question to get better. They would never, they don't have the wherewithal to be like, maybe we were wrong. Like that's something you heard Matt and I on the call. Maybe we said something wrong. You know, maybe I've done something to contribute to this problem. Instead, they only ask questions themselves as a means of attack. This is how they ask other people questions. And so that's how they perceive questions to them. So they behave in a way where when they ask questions, they're simply using it as a power game. Whereas when we ask questions, we're simply using it as a way to explore and be curious and get clarity. They're asking questions as a means of attack. Therefore, when they hear a question, they view it as a personal attack. And so I think that reflects some of the problems in leadership culture, is that if you're incompetent and you know it, or maybe you don't know, you're blind to it, then when you get asked a question, and if I can be honest, like even as a young minister, I think back to my early ministry, when people would ask about things to me, about, you know, my own training, or how do I know this, or that kind of thing, you can get really reactive really quick because you feel they don't trust me, or like they're touching an insecurity typically in your own soul, that as a young church planner, you don't know everything. Even as an old church planner, you don't know everything, but especially as a young church planner. And so when people go, hey, why is this happening in our church? Your immediate reaction, if you're insecure, is to go, how dare you? You know, because you're so insecure and you're incompetent, and that's just normal human life. You get reactive. That's not good. And as you mature as a leader, as you get more power, that becomes a major liability and it becomes a source of contention. Because if you never grow out of that, if you never let people into your life where they can help you get better, if you don't have an attitude of like, hey, thanks so much for the feedback, I can always get better. If you have an attitude of like, how dare you question me? Boy, that produces a lot of bad fruit. And that's what we're seeing in Acts 29, is a lot of bad fruit. One particular thing I wanted to go into more detail on is Brian Howard's position as president in Acts 29. So Brian Howard has deep ties with evangelical establishment. He has personally coached Russell Moore. So Brian Howard runs a coaching ministry called Context Coaching. I don't know if Russell Moore went through Context Coaching or what, but I do know that Brian Howard has personally coached Russell Moore. This goes back to Brian Howard's days at Sojourn in Louisville, Kentucky. Sojourn used to be an Acts 29 church They left. They started their own network called Soldier Network. It's been since rebranded as Harbor Network. But he was friends with Russell Moore there in Louisville, Kentucky, when Russell Moore was at Southern Baptist Theological Seminary. And there at Sojourn, he was on staff with Mike Cosper, who is now at Christianity Today. You may know him because of the Rise and Fall of Mars Hill podcast. What you need to know about the situation at Sojourn, Christianity Today, Mike Cosper, and I think I've highlighted this, maybe not here, but in other interviews, is that they had their own Mark Driscoll problem at Sojourn. And so when I hear Mike Cosper talk about Mark Driscoll being wicked and bad, he does a little bit of this on the Rise and Fall Marshall podcast, but it seems to me to be a means of scapegoating the own problem he created at his own church. I have no idea about the health of Sojourn right now. It's not my place to say. All that to say, Mike Cosper, Russell Moore, and Brian Howard go way back, and they have deep ties. In fact, I'll share this. After we were removed, the chief creative officer of Christianity Today reached out to our church's oversight board so that that oversight board would meet with me to talk about my problems. And I don't know why that was. I don't know how that meeting came about. I just know that the CCO of Christianity Today called down our oversight board to meet with me about my problems. And so that's how I think a lot of this stuff goes. I think a lot of the commenters said it was about Russell Moore, and I think they're dead on. I think they're right. And so there's a lot of connections there. You've also got connections with Ed Stetzer, who's famous in the evangelical church planting ecosystem in North America. He actually helped start Acts 29. He was on one of the board documents, which, if you don't know, those are actually publicly accessible. The bylaws are now publicly accessible. They always have been, I guess, on the state of California's website. I didn't know this. That's why I kept asking for the bylaws. If I'd been smart, I would have just gone to the state of California's website and looked them up. But you can do that yourself. But in some of the original founding documents of Acts 29, Ed Stetzer is on that list. With Brian Howard particularly, you've got somebody who will not reply to emails. And when you would reply, he's always going to defer. Now, whether that was just personally because he didn't like me or doesn't like me, who knows? But it was constantly deflection, and he wouldn't answer questions as the president and or whatever his role was at the time when I was asking those questions. Within Acts 29, if you look at their staff page with the 44 staff, you've got a lot of nepotism going on. So you've got Brian Howard's wife as head of HR when she has no HR experience. Now, I don't even want to name her because it's not about me having any animosity towards Brian Howard or his wife or anything like that. In fact, I'm really hesitant to even name these guys, these pastors, because my goal isn't to dox or anything like that. I just want to go with publicly accessible information. Our church personally is going through a lot of leftist rage right now. There's a lot of people trying to dox my family, dox Matt's family. People have offered to pay other people money to harm us. Our church has been vandalized. And so I do not wish harm on these people. And I really want to steer clear of anyone, you know, trying to do anything harmful. But I just wanted to highlight, the reason I highlight as an example of the nepotism is you've got the director of HR who has no HR experience being the president of the board's wife. And that speaks to a nepotistic culture. Within that also, you've got Justin Anderson, who's the director of church planting in Acts 29. So we're a church planting, and I keep saying we because we got removed and we were in it so long. He is the director of church planting for the former network we used to belong to. Justin Anderson gave a really funny talk at the national conference. They actually didn't publicize it because a lot of people thought it was misogynistic. I thought it was pretty funny. In fact, he criticized me from the stage. I had a good laugh about it. It's funny. I think he does stand-up comedy on the side. But he is the director of church planting. He's also Brian Howard's business partner in Context Coaching. And so you've got this weird kind of like personal favors and jobs within Acts 29. The reason I highlight those two guys is, to my knowledge, neither of those men attend an Acts 29 church. And so I want to boil it down for you really clearly. You have the president of Acts 29 and the director of Acts 29 church planting, and neither of them attend an Acts 29 church. Now, when I was on the phone with Tyler Jones, who is a vice president now in Acts 29, he was like, why is that a problem? And I'm like, my guy, like, if the president of the Southern Baptist Convention was not a pastor in the Southern Baptist Convention, I think everyone would see that's a problem. And so that's why I asked those questions. believe in the best. Maybe they're trying to find one. Maybe they're in between churches. But that's like reality right now. Going back to another board member, Matt Chandler, who voted to remove us from fellowship. And I saw some people asking, like, you know, there were a couple articles written like Matt Chandler kicks out this church. And people were like, well, it wasn't Matt Chandler. And it's like, no, he's on the board. Like he helped make this decision. And something to know with kind of Chandler and the ecosystem is, and you can go find this episode behind the paywall on Patreon with Guy Mason in Australia. And Guy Mason did a sermon series on left versus right, all this kind of stuff. He promoted transgender ideology, said churches should have transgender bathrooms, all this kind of stuff. He was saying the church should be at the forefront of transgender rights. And so I brought this concern to the board. And within the next 2 months after that sermon, Guy Mason was preaching at the Village Church. And now, just now, last week, Matt Chandler is going down to Australia to preach at Guy Mason's church. And so my point in highlighting that isn't to hate on those guys, isn't to dump on those guys. It's to show that right now the Acts 29 leadership is unapologetic and undeterred on these matters. They have no sense of like, maybe we should do something different, or maybe we should take responsibility for our actions. There is complete incompetence at the top. What I want to do is go a little bit deeper into a few words that I would use to describe how Acts 29 is behaving. I'm not using these words to be incendiary. I'm using these words to be dictionary definition terms of what is happening within the network. The first word I want to use is corrupt. And I'm going to use the dictionary definition here. Corrupt means willing to use their power to do dishonest or illegal things in return for money or to get an advantage. What you see in Acts 29 is a corrupt organization. They're using their power, they're taking money from churches to do dishonest practices, to remove churches from fellowship in order to get an advantage. Another word to describe it would be hypocrisy. This is behavior that does not meet the moral standards or match the opinions that somebody claims to have. So you have a network that claims to be humble and receptive and mature. This was a big talking point when they removed Mark Driscoll from the network. They wanted to grow beyond. They said, we used to be like teenagers and now we're adults. And they're still behaving like teenagers with their incompetence. There is a hypocrisy in the network, particularly as it pertains to social matters, where somebody can get out and say all sorts of stuff they want that pushes transgender ideology or pushes Black Lives Matter or whatever they want. And that's totally permissible in the network. But as soon as somebody like me says we should not be a fan of Acts 29, but we should not be a fan of Black Lives Matter, we should not participate in these Marxist things, all of a sudden that's viewed as wrongthink. And you're not allowed to say that kind of stuff. You're not allowed to question the narrative. And so there's a great deal of duplicity and hypocrisy. The other word, and this is going to be the most provocative, and I'm not doing it to be provocative. This is a word I deeply care about as someone who studies church history, is tyrannical. Tyrannical, and the next word I'm going to use is arbitrary, but tyrannical specifically in our day and age, it can be really used politically to speak about power and rule. If you want to look at the last 2 years, 3 years in terms of government edicts around lockdowns and that kind of thing, there was a lot of tyranny going on. But tyrannical just means, and tyranny just means using power or authority over people in an unfair and cruel way. And I think that's exactly right. What we have with Acts 29 is a tyrannical organization. And then the last word I just highlighted, it would be arbitrary. Arbitrary means that the governance is not based on reason or a system. It's not based on a plan and it's unfair. So it's completely made up based on other prior commitments. It's completely made up based on other prior commitments. So we have an arbitrary system of governance that has no sense of fairness or fair proceedings or anything like that. This is something the reformers constantly highlighted in their writings with the Catholic Church, is the arbitrary nature of their rule. It was not based on reason, a system, or a plan, and it was unfair. So what we're going up against with Acts 29 is a corrupt, arbitrary, tyrannical, hypocritical organization that traffics in elitism and paying people to keep silent. And, you know, I could go back to the Reformation to try to highlight that this is a similar thing they faced. I think a better analogy might be the Puritans in England, where you had the conformist and nonconformist, where you had some people that stayed, some people that left, some people that tried to reform the system, some people that tried to leave the system. we were some of the people who were conformist in Acts 29 in the sense that we were trying to reform the system from the inside out. I have other friends that were nonconformists. They would get on the phone with me and be like, I'm out. I'm not going to do this. It's takes too much energy to try to reform something this bad. And I don't blame them for that. But I think it's a better illustration to think about the Puritans in England. There's a lot of historical resourcement that you could look to in terms of how they were trying to reform the church. So just a couple of key facts that I wasn't able to include in the American Reformer piece and we didn't highlight in the last episode would be right now, Acts 29 has actually started to fund church planters. Back in the day, they never funded church planters. They've started to do that in the last 6 years. But currently what's being offered to church planters is $25,000. You can get $25,000. I don't know how you'd get that. I'm assuming there's an application process. But the thing is, you have to pay back $50,000. And so they're going to get you on the hook for a $25,000 loan to start your church, and you have to pay back $50,000. That, to me, doesn't really bode well. In fact, I've joked with Matt, maybe we could do a better loan rate than a predatory loan like that. They're going to couch it in like, well, they can pay it back whenever they want, but they're still going to owe us $50,000. So you're going to be on the hook if you're a church planter with Acts 29. You get that $25K, you're going to have to pay back $50K. That's a heavy burden to lay on church planters or anyone for that matter. Right now, the way they behave is that if you ask questions over email, they will rarely reply to the email. They will say, let's hop on the phone. That's why Matt was so prescient in recording the phone call, because we had been called multiple times after we sent an email asking for a clarifying statement. We had been called multiple times. And the reason they don't want anything in writing, the reason they so hate the fact that I leaked that phone call, is because they're trying to hide their beliefs and they're trying to hide their convictions. And so the way they do that is by not replying to your emails and instead hopping on the phone. And so I would just warn anyone who's in the network that's seeking clarity on these points, that if you want an email answered, you should be pretty clear about that and not answer their phone calls. The last thing I thought I'd be clear about is, like, we know that Acts 29 utilizes a public relations firm to handle all of these matters, including like who can write for their blog. So I don't know if we were blacklisted or not from the blog. I know that's a pretty, you know, strong word to use, blacklisting, but I at least know that the PR firm governs their public image to the world. And so if somebody doesn't fit the mold or doesn't say the right things, the PR firm basically says no. Just an example on that would be like the Acts 29 podcast. I had the host of the Acts 29 podcast on my podcast, and I thought it was going to be like a one-for-one deal. I was going to get to promote my book to the Acts 29 podcast and to give church planters a great resource. In fact, I sent out 50 copies for free to Acts 29 pastors, just to bless them and try to encourage other people. And I really wanted some feedback on that. I didn't hear a lot, but I was hoping to be a one for one, but I was immediately denied that I would be on the podcast. And the next episode, they had the host of The Chosen, the creator of The Chosen. And so there just seems to be a very strange way of operating, but I think that can be explained by a PR firm managing their brand. And that's what it comes down to for them, is protecting the brand at all cost. We got to protect the brand. And so, you know, I am not of the opinion that they're going to do anything, that there's going to be no public statement. No, they're not going to be clear with actual churches. If anything, they're going to continue lying about us, because that's kind of the way the PR world works, is you don't talk, you say nothing, you move on, it'll blow over. And so I know some of my friends are asking them to give more clarity on the matter of our removal. I don't think it's coming. Now, if they do issue a public statement or if they come after us, you know, so be it. It is what it is. All we have is the truth on our side, and to us, that's enough. But yeah, I just wanted to address that point. And I think there's some people that are probably happy that we got removed from the network. They really don't care how shady it was. They're like, yeah, Chase and Matt and their church wasn't a good fit for Acts 29. And, you know, that's fine. I don't really have anything to say to them. I think for most people, they can see clearly that this was unfair, unjust, and that it was a deep betrayal in terms of our friendships with the people in the network. And kind of my last point would be to the guys in the network, you need to know that the situation is a lot worse than you can possibly imagine. It's a lot worse than that phone call. It goes all the way to the top. And if you care at all about preserving the Acts 29 network as it exists today, you need to immediately talk to somebody who can give you clarity and ask questions. If there is any chance left to right the ship of Acts 29, you need to use any means at your disposal to do so. You need to reach out to leadership. You need to ask questions. I can say that confidently because I know the truth, because I know what's going on, because I know what was done to us. And you need to start asking questions today. In my mind, it would be funny if there were enough Acts 29 pastors that just got on Facebook today and questioned Russell Moore, not even critiqued him, just questioned him to see if they would all get kicked out at the same time. I don't know if that's prudent or not, but in my mind, you should also be preparing for collapse. You should be preparing now for your church. If the Acts 29 network didn't exist, what would you do next? Because this thing cannot sustain itself. There's complete incompetence in the way they handle things, and it goes all the way to the top of the board. So that is kind of what I wanted to share on my follow-up episode regarding Acts 29. I don't say these things lightly. I say these things sincerely, wanting the best for the network to change. I know Matt said on the phone call that he wants to burn it all down. If it needs to burn down, it needs to burn down. But I'm a big fan of reforming institutions. And so I would just encourage any Acts 29 pastor that's still in the network, do something. The time to speak is now. Do something. I wanted to address a couple more questions for some friends. Two questions that came up were, what lessons have I learned from this? And what has God taught me through this? And to kind of close out the episode, I'm actually going to do that as a feature behind the paywall because those are more personal topics. And so if you're interested in hearing the answer to those questions, I'd invite you to go sign up on the Patreon and you can hear the rest of this episode there behind the paywall. And if you choose not to do that, this is the end of today's episode. Hope it was helpful for you. Give it a great rating, share it with a friend. And if you're an Acts 29 pastor, today's the day to get to work. Thanks for joining me.